So, confession time, I was a wolf kid.
Welcome to Keep It Fictional, a weekly podcast for book lovers by book lovers. Build your to-be-read list with Sadie, Liz, Virginia, Fiona, and Corrine from the Port Moody Public Library. Warning, this podcast contains strong opinions and may cause an increase in your library holds list.
Welcome back to Keep It Fictional, the book lover podcast from the Port Moody Public Library. I'm Virginia, here with Corrine, with Sadie, and with Al. And today we are going to continue to count down to tell you about our favorite books of 2023. So last week we talked about our, I don't want to say bottom three picks, that doesn't sound very good, but like number three to number five. And today we're going to reveal to you our favorite, absolute favorites, plus also some shout out to some of the books that we read this year that we also love a lot. So we are going to go right into it. We are going to start with Sadie.
All right. So this book was actually mentioned last week. This did not make it to my top one this year, which was a bit of a surprise because I absolutely love this author and everybody knows that I love this author. But this is Hellbent by Leigh Bardugo, which I didn't realize that Al is also a Ninth House Leigh Bardugo fan. So that was something that I learned last week. So I won't talk a ton about this, but just a brief overview if you did not listen to last week or if you listened to last week so long ago that you need a bit of a reminder. This is the second installment in the Alex Stern Ninth House series. Alex Stern, Galaxy Stern, can see ghosts and is part of a magical secret society at Yale University. And it is her job in this ninth secret society to manage all of the other secret societies, to make sure that none of the other secret societies are using magic in a way that is not supposed to be used. And her job is to be at any of their ceremonies to make sure that nothing bad happens. And so as Al kind of mentioned last week, Alex now has to go into hell to rescue Darlington, her Dante, but is coming up with some challenges because she's not allowed to. She's been told that she's not allowed to rescue him. And so her and her partner Dawes are needing to figure out how to save Darlington. And chaos ensues. And as Al made a spoiler last week, vampires might appear at some point. Yeah, which I always enjoy a good vampire book. So yeah, so I, as you know, I love Leigh Bardugo. I am a huge fan of her YA stuff. Ninth House, surprisingly, actually, I feel a bit differently about this than Al did. I preferred Hellbent over Ninth House. I felt like Ninth House took a long time to kind of get you into the story, whereas I feel like Hellbent, because of where Ninth House left off, you just had to kind of jump right into it and you were able to sort of get right to the action, which I really appreciated about Hellbent. But yeah, I love a good Leigh Bardugo. I love the characters. I love the relationship. I love kind of the humor that she puts into it and also got kind of that dark academia magic school kind of stuff and set in an actual place. I remember right after I read Ninth House, we were supposed to take a trip to Yale University to visit a friend of mine from library school who was working there currently. And then COVID happened. And so we unfortunately had to cancel our trip to Yale. But I would like to one day and go and kind of see all of the places that Leigh Bardugo talks about. I know she has done many, many trips to Yale to make sure that everything is accurate and things like that. So yeah, so that is Hellbent by Leigh Bardugo, my number two pick this year.
Okay. Exciting to see all these book twins. Will we have one more? Do we have more book twins? We will find out. Al, what is in your number two spot? All right. So confession time. I was a wolf kid. I loved wolves so much as a kid. I wrote stories with characters who were wolves or who could transform into wolves. I imagined wolves running alongside the car whenever we were driving places. I devoured books about wolves. So when I came across this slim little novel where the last pack of wild wolves is being researched by a woman who has a brain implant that lets her directly interface with one of the wolf's brains, I knew I was in for a treat. So this is Feed Them Silence by Leigh Mandello. Our main character, Sean Kell Ludden, is a neuroscientist, but she has always held a deep fascination with wolves. Her project is one that might propel her to scientific stardom, but it's also one that she hopes will soothe something of the void she feels inside of herself. Kate,
the wolf that she can interface with becomes an obsession, with Sean wanting to interface with her as much as possible. And as the project continues, Sean's strained marriage strains further, and the relationships in her human life seem to pale next to the intimacy she feels she shares with the wolves. This novel is short but fascinating. I was expecting a bit more horror or body horror coming from Leigh Mandello, but instead it was more of a meditation on relationships. It touches on questions of ethics and whether it's truly possible to completely emotionally distance oneself from the subject of research. And it's about what humans owe to nature. I loved it and highly recommend it for any other former wolf kids.
We learn things on Keep It Fictional every single time. That sounds great. I think these days I like a quiet novel. I think that sounds like a good one. I think every year there's always a book that is like one of those books that has a really, really weird premise, and then you're like reading it and suddenly it will just hit you with like just rip your heart out, that kind of book. So that's every year I have one of those. And this year's pick is one of my choice for a most anticipated picks during the summer. And it is Oh God, the Sun Goes by David Connor. If my book friends remember, this is the one where we follow an unnamed narrator going out to look for the sun because the sun is missing. And for whatever reason, he believes that the sun is hiding in Arizona. And so our narrator goes into this weird, surreal journey in starting in Tempe, Arizona, and get across the state, encountering many strange individuals and their stories, and weird stuff happen. But as you are reading it, you got these maps, the you are here kind of maps. And then as you're going through the book, you're like, wait a second, I'm not in Arizona. Where are we? And of course, I'm not going to give that away, but that's where I think like you start to like question everything that you have just read. And that's when it also hits you with this emotionally, I guess, evocative or poignant kind of story of heartbreak. And I love stories like that, that lure you in with this like weird, strange premise, and then like it becomes something much, much more, much more. And I think that's where weird stories really work for me, and that's my favorite type. And I guess I would say also that this is an author. David Connor is an author from Montreal, and he is a neuroscientist, and he definitely make use of his expertise in this book and make it all the more compelling. So if you are looking for a book with like strange premise and also tugs at your heartstrings, I think this would be a good pick. It's a weird book, you know, maybe not for everybody, but it's so good. So this is Oh God, the Sun Goes by David Connor. All right, Miss Corrine, number two.
Again, going off my theme this year of very strong images, the one that haunts me from this book is a young girl about maybe grade 2 or 3, and she's walking with her school friends. And it's after school, and she's wearing her lovely uniform, kind of spotless and white, and kind of chatting and gossiping with her friends. And she's about to walk over a bridge. And she sees on the other side of the bridge, there is a man who is going to cross past them. And he is dressed in ragged clothes, and he's dirty, and he smells a little bit. He's obviously been working in the field somewhere, working with cattle. His hands are calloused. His skin is kind of dark from the sun. And the little girl's friends kind of giggle a little bit to themselves to see someone who's kind of so unkempt, so kind of dirty, someone who clearly works with their hands. And the little girl realizes that the man walking towards them is her father. And in a brief moment, she catches him and looks in his eyes, and he sees her. And she turns her head and pretends that she doesn't know him. And at the same time, he looks at her and turns his head and pretends that he doesn't know her. This is one of the roughest scenes that I have ever read in an entire book. And if you would like to experience like 360 pages of
heart-wrenching meditation on the extremely complex feelings of parents and children and, you know, the stories that parents keep from their children to keep them safe and kind of keep them in a world that is free from hurt and pain, and the things that individuals have had to endure that through all of this work and through all of this hardship, they have kept themselves gentle and kind, then I can heartily recommend I Went to See My Father by Kyung Suk Shin, translated by my man, Anton Her. This is a beautiful, heart-wrenching story by the only woman and only South Korean to win the Man Asian Literary Prize. She is the author of previous books like Violets, the, again, brutally heart-wrenching Please Look After Mom, which I cried starting the first paragraph and then just kept going. This is the beautiful story of Han, who has lost her child, and her father is a little bit unstable as his mother has gone to the big city to undergo treatment. And so for the first time, she is kind of left alone with her father and kind of recognizing him as a fellow adult with his own story. And as you delve deeper, you realize that his is the story of many average people in Korea during the Korean War and all of the horrors and traumas that he has had to endure. And that somehow he conserved this core of gentleness that he keeps for his children and that he shows to them. And despite all of the hardship and all of the ugliness around him that he has constantly chosen in his own way and the only way that he is capable to love his children. Again, this is a master at work. A true master at work. It is a very quiet book where you don't feel like a lot happens until you're kind of hit with these scenes that just kind of crystallize something so human and so relatable that they knock the wind right out of you. So this is my number two pick. It is a beautiful book that I do expect to see on some like other best of lists. If not my book friends here, I feel like Anton Her has got my back.
Thank you, Corinne. All right. So we have gone through but before we do that, we're going to quickly give some shout outs to books that we have loved that we may not be able to put in our top five. So why don't we start with Corinne?
All right. This list is always so impossible, but my top five shout outs, 2023 books, The Skull by John Klassen, which I loved. Burn Anything That Tries to Burn You. Love it. Greek Lessons by Han Kang, which I also loved, but is way too hard to talk about in any way. I don't even know if I actually understood it. I just kind of like felt it. Sleeping Car Porter by Suzette Mayers. I loved that book. It was nothing what I thought it was going to be, and I really appreciated that it wasn't. Dandelion by Jamie Chai Yun Liu, which I talked about on this podcast, which I really enjoyed. Another searing look at relationships between parents and their children. Swimmers by Julie Otsuka, which was absolutely wonderful. And the reissue of Osamu Dazai's The Flowers of Buffoonery and Philip Mould's, of course, The Art Detectives, which I enjoyed so much.
All right, Al, how about yours?
All right. I've just got two books that I want to shout out real quick, and they are very different from the ones that I talked about today. First, I'd like to shout out, I am part of a sort of queer romance book club, which I joined because I don't usually read a lot of romance, and because one of my friends started it and begged me to join. So my favorite book from that I read this year, A Lady for a Duke by Alexis Hall, came out in 2022, so I couldn't put it on this list, but this historical novel with a trans woman protagonist is full of heart and quite well written. It's funny, heartwarming, truly a great love story. Check it out if you're a romance fan, please. It's so good. I was really surprised. And then the other book that I couldn't talk about in this because it wasn't published in 2022, but maybe my favorite book of the year, Lonely Castle in the Mirror by Mizuki Sugimura. Fantastic novel. Don't want to say anything, don't want to spoil anything, but it made me ugly cry. Books do not make me ugly cry very often. This book made me ugly cry.
Thank you, Al and Sadie.
All right. I don't have a ton of other ones, but Wayward by Amelia Hart, which I talked about a few weeks ago. What the River Knows by Isabel Ibanez. This one was not published in 2023, but I read it in 2023 and I absolutely loved it. A Broken Blade by Melissa Blair, the first of the Halfling saga. And I am currently just started the second book, finally. But I'm very, very excited to read it. The third one is coming out early next year, I believe. So I can't wait for that one. Oh my gosh, I had another one. Nine Liars also didn't come out, but came out right at the very end of 2022. The fifth book in the Truly Devious series by Maureen Johnson.
And for my shout outs, you know, so many, but some of the modern classics that I read around the world, Wizard of the Crow by Gugi Nwatiango, The Hearing Trumpet by Lenora Carrington. I haven't laughed so hard with that book. Invention of Morale by Adolfo Wion Caceres. That was really, really great. Finally got to reading a Salman Rushdie, finally, Victory City with this year's new book. And I think one of Elle's favorites, Seth Dickinson, The Traitor by Rue Cormoran. Absolutely amazing. Comics, in addition to all the Spy Family that I read, Maxi Kid by Pedro Martin is really, really good. Love the art, love the story, love everything about it. Short story collections, of course, you know, Evil Flowers by Gunhild Oyahak. I don't know how to say that word at all. And also The Secret Life of Insects and Other Stories by Bernardo and Skinka. Again, show me what short stories can do. Continue that whole sort of devastating kind of like books. Tell Me I'm Worthless by Alison Brumford, one of the most frightening kind of haunted house story that I read. I love that book. And of course, the book that I recommended to Fiona, Margaret and the Case of the Missing Body by Megan Mills. Love, love, love that book. Continue to have a lot of sea creatures in my reading, like last year. So this is Corrine by Jay Song. And it was very weird because it's just this like swimmer turning into like a mermaid, or trying to be a mermaid. But it also brought back all the memories of this Chinese actress singer Fei Wong, who was mentioned in the book like a whole bunch of times. And I was obsessed with this person when I was younger. So it was really weird to see that again. And of course, Shark Heart by Emily Habeck, the one about the husband turning into a shark. That was the closest to my top. I almost made it to my number fifth place. But anyway. And then An Archive of Brightness by Kelsey Socha, which is, you know, not about sea creatures or not, but like I would never forget that. Like I thought there were two lobsters, men falling in love, like half lobster, half man falling in love. I still can remember. So I'm going to say it's sea creatures anyway. And of course, some of the great, great recommendations by some of the previous book friends. The best one I read recently, On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong. I can't believe I didn't read it when it came out. It was so good. So good. So thank you, Mark. Thank you, Fiona, for that. And so many, so many bright spots in my reading year, even if it is a crappy year. Of course, the brightest thing in my 2023 reading is Clarice Lispector. I'm like so happy that I discovered Clarice. I've got like a list of books at home right now. I'm not allowed to touch them because they're supposed to be for Christmas, but we got it ahead of time and they're just sitting there and I really want to get my hands on it, but I'm not allowed, so I have to wait for the holidays. So I'm looking forward to that reading marathon. So those are my shout outs. And so now we are going to go into our top number one picks of the year. Sadie, what is the best book that you have read this year?
Young adult, fantasy, mythology, mystery, romance. So those are some of the genres that this book has been placed under on Goodreads. So it is not a big surprise that this book made my number one spot. This book was almost on my most anticipated, I think, for the summer. And then it did get bumped off just because that was our Say Goodbye to Mark episode. And so I chose a Mark book instead. But this one almost made it onto that list. And this is Threads That Bind by Kika Hatzopoulou. I think I'm saying that right. Kika Hatzopoulou, this is their debut novel and it takes place kind of in a post-apocalyptic world, which, so it's funny because I always say I do not enjoy post-apocalyptic books, but this number of post-apocalyptic books that I read is quite high. So I feel like I need to change that kind of disclaimer about myself. I enjoy them if they have good characters and a good story. And I think when the focus is not necessarily on the fact that the world has ended and more on the characters and on the story, then that is when I do enjoy that kind of book. And so this book does take place in sort of a post-apocalyptic world in the half-sunken city of Atlanta, or Atlante, Atlanta. And it follows the descendants of Greek gods. And the main focus of this book is the descendants of the Fates. Now, the descendants of the Fates are always born in threes, one to weave, one to draw, and one to cut the threads that connect people to the things that they love and to life itself. The Aura sisters are no exception to this. And Io, the youngest, who is the cutter, uses her fate-born abilities as a private investigator in the city of Atlanta. However, her latest job leads her to a pretty terrifying discovery. Somebody is abducting women, maiming their life threads, the threads that actually hold these people to life itself, and setting these ghost-like wraiths free in the city, and they are killing people. This is something that only a cutter can do. Now, there are not very many cutters in the world. Io is one of them, and she knows that the blame is going to fall on her or somebody just like her. And so she teams up with the infamous mob queen to try and figure out what is happening and who is setting these wraiths free and cutting their life thread. To kind of solve this mystery, she's teamed up with the mob queen's kind of second in command, Ide Runa. And Ide is someone that Io has known about for her whole life, although she's never met him, because Ide and Io share a very rare fate thread, which means that they are bound to be soulmates. Now, I think you remember in one of our trope episodes talking about tropes that we absolutely hate. This is a trope that I absolutely hate, is the one about two people who are born meant to be together. They have no other choice. This is their destiny. But the way that they go about it in this book is actually not terrible. And they talk a lot about the idea that when you're not given a choice to something, kind of what do you do in that instance? Is it something that you should just kind of wholeheartedly believe in, or is it something that you have to question a little bit? And it's something that Io struggles with pretty much the whole book, knowing that this person is connected to her in some way and he doesn't have a choice about it. So they do kind of look at that a little bit more critically than some of the other lifelong mates and meant to be together kind of storylines. So yeah, so this is kind of an investigation into these murders mixed with this kind of Greek mythology, and it obviously has the romance in it, and it just kind of hit all of the boxes that I am always looking for. And so I think that's kind of why it ended up in my number one spot. The second book is coming out next year, which I'm really excited about as well. They ended it kind of in a very, not necessarily on a cliffhanger, but on kind of like a, you know what happens, but you're really excited to move on to the next point. So I'm really excited to see where the story goes and kind of what happens to Io and to the rest of the world in Atlanta. So that is Threads That Bind by Kiko Hatsopoulou.
A perfect Sadie book. A perfect Sadie book. I'm so glad you found it.
All right. And a YA, because like you said, you haven't had any YA, but YA has to be the best. Number one spot, obviously. So that's great. All right, Al, what is in your number one spot?
Well, like many of the books on my list today, it is a horror novel. But unlike most of the books I read this year, it is a YA novel. I'm not a huge YA reader, but I picked this up because I've loved the author's past work. And so I picked up The Spirit Bears Its Teeth by Andrew Joseph White. This is the second novel by White that I've read, the first being his debut YA horror novel, Hell Followed With Us. This one follows our autistic trans protagonist Silas in a historical setting inspired by the spiritualist movement of the 19th and early 20th centuries, which is just a really cool period that I don't think is played with enough by fiction. So that was a good draw. So in a world where the veil between the human and spirit worlds is thin, where men with violet eyes are valued for their ability to be spirit mediums and banish hauntings, and women with violet eyes are valued for their ability to bear violet-eyed sons, Silas is a violet-eyed young man who everyone around him sees as a woman. After a disastrous attempt to earn his freedom, Silas is diagnosed with veil sickness and sent to Braxton Sanatorium and Finishing School to be turned into the perfect young lady and the perfect wife. Once there, Silas realizes that the place is even darker than he thought when the souls of missing students begin to beg him for help. So this was a visceral, fascinating book. I loved Hell Followed With Us, but this book feels like a slightly more mature outing from White. The way he portrays trans joy, trans pain, and most especially trans rage are gripping and satisfying. Big trigger warnings for this book include medical gore, including one scene where the protagonist performs a C-section, eye gore, especially, be warned for that if you have a problem with eye stuff, sexual assault, transphobia, forced institutionalization, conversion therapy, and more. But if you can handle some truly heavy material, this book might be for you. Despite its being definitely a horror novel, like many of the books I've talked about today, it has love and hope, a fierce, blood-soaked sort of hope, but hope nonetheless at its core. And that's really what carried me through it. This is a fantastic novel. Even if you're not a YA person, but you like horror and you want to read more about trans stories, even if you don't want to just read about trans stories, but you want to read like a really interesting mystery set in a really interesting sort of historical time period that doesn't get enough love, definitely pick up this one.
Thank you, Al. I read the first one, but didn't get to the second one yet. So a bit exciting to find out. Okay, thank you. So for my number one pick, a lot of books on my list are not books that I would recommend to anybody, really, because they're like in subject matter, in the writing style, they're all like very strange. And so I feel like it's not really reads for everybody, even though I love them and I want everybody to read them. So that's why I was so, so delighted to find out that someone else has also chosen this book as their favorite of 2023. Not on this panel, but it was one of our other staff that works at the library. And when everybody was sending me their picks for the annual staff guessing game, I screamed and I ran over to the person and be like, oh, I'm so excited. So I was really, and it was a surprise book twin. It's not my usual book twin. So I was quite surprised, but maybe I shouldn't be, because we've had some books that we both like before. So it was very, very interesting to find out who somebody that actually just also recognized the brilliance of this book. It is just a 122-page novella. I devour it. I borrowed the library copy. Then I went and bought the ebook. And then I went to buy the print book. I love the book so much. And then I heard the author read an excerpt at a podcast, which I alluded to, Between the Covers. And I was just so impressed that I went out to see like audiobooks. I need to find the audiobooks now. But I was very sad to discover that the author doesn't actually read them himself. He should. He really should. He's so good at it. But I think it's a book, like many of the others, that are difficult to read, but it is all about compassion. It's 3 a.m. and Shai has just filled a backpack full of rocks and he's carrying it too on his shoulders. Sorry. He's sneaking down the stairs and he's quietly leaving the house. And he's making a trip to the pond and he has a plan, but he's not really sure whether he's going to do this yet. Shai is a 16-year-old teenage boy living at Last Chance boarding school. Why the heck am I crying? Oh my gosh. Okay. We didn't plan to cry so early. But anyway, I'm just going to cry later. Ugh. Okay. Shai is a 16-year-old teenage boy living at Last Chance boarding school. As the name suggests, this is his last chance. This boarding school was created for those whom the society has deemed pretty much lost causes. This is a house supposedly for the most delinquent and violent young offenders in the country. But Last Chance Boarding School may not belong for this world, because they have heard that the land has actually been sold so that they can go build some condos. So where will Shai and the other boys go? As Shai walks to the pond, we as readers are bombarded, just as Shai is, by his memories, by all the noises in his head. And we get what goes through Shai's mind, the things that he sees and he hears now, and all his past conversations with the other boys, with all the therapists that he has, the girls that he has dated, the documentary crew that is doing a film on the Last Chance Boarding School, his mother, his stepdad asking him, when are you going to be normal again?
and all his past transgressions, all the things that he has done that some of them he feels bad about, some of them not so much. Everything just get all mixed up together. Everything's all jumbled. This, we don't know if it's reality, it's his dreams, it's his thoughts, it's his memories. Everything, just this cacophony of noises and complaints and words of disappointments and words that came out that you can't take back. And it's just this non-stop replay of his mistakes and his failures. And all he's got is his headphones and his music that he loves so much that he's trying to block everything out, but he's not sure if he can do it anymore. Shy by Max Porter is a story that really demands us to walk side by side with a troubled teenage young boy who is just overwhelmed with all the expectations that people put on him. And he has this rage that he can't control, and that sometimes leads to really bad things that happen. But he's also this very vulnerable, sensitive person. And as the last chance school talk about, like, you know, it is important to remember that sometimes these boys can be both. And Max Porter is such a wizard with words. He uses everything that is available to him to convey this story, to convey the compassion that he is asking us to have. He's got this really amazing kind of, like, even though it's a novel, but it's really poetry when you really look at it. It's just this really, like, wonderful poetic prose. The rhythm of the words that demand sort of different readings. And he stretched every sentence to make sure that each of them counts. Well, not only is the prose amazing, but he also uses the layout of the book. And that's why you kind of need a print copy. He's using the indents, he's using the alignment, he's using font sizes, he's using different typefaces to try to convey all those different noises and all those different memories that is happening in Shai's head. And sometimes the words are so overwhelming that it falls off the edges because it is just so loud. And he's trying to use all those different ways to help you understand what is Shai going through. It's definitely experimental, it's unconventional. And I think it's just what I needed this year, because like I mentioned, I think, and Corinne was saying something similar too, it's just like, I'm not really into plot this year. I just want to get into someone's head and stay there and really, really get to know them. It's just such a wonderful book. Again, I think, again, really, really hard to read, but it's really about empathy, about developing that compassion. And I think listening to Max Porter, that just that one interview talk, you know, he's so full of compassion. It's a very short book. It's hard to read, but it's such a wonderful book. So this is Shy by Max Porter. And I'm going to give a shout out to my book twin, Sarah. I know. Yeah, wasn't expecting that. I'm just like, but I think both of us really, really love Ian Reid, and Ian Reid books are also all very weird. And so I'm like, you know, it tracks. It makes sense. So absolute favorite book of 2023, Miss Corinne.
All right. This is kind of cheating. This actually isn't my favorite book. There are parts of it that I thought could have been really well written. And I don't think that it necessarily gets to the heart of what I really want to know. But it is the greatest story of 2023. And so despite all of those things, it does make it to the top of my list because it combines like two of my favorite things, one of which is art, the second of which is stealing art. And this is the absolutely, to borrow a term from Virginia, an absolutely banana pants story. On the surface of it, it seems like something that you wouldn't even get in a Hollywood movie because some executive would look at the script and go, no, that simply is not possible. And yet it is. It was. And somehow continues to be. I first came across this story in, I believe, an article in GQ about this particular case. I believe also written by our author, journalist Michael Finkel, talking about the story of Stefan Breitweiser. And I'm taking a stab at that pronunciation. Stefan and allegedly, his girlfriend drove around France and Switzerland stealing $1.4 billion worth of art. $1.4 billion worth of art. And not just paintings, they would help themselves to statues, famous cups, weapons, swords, essentially kind of whatever caught Stefan's eye. It was easy enough to do. They did it for years and did not get caught. The only reason that these two thieves, one of them very much a thief, one of them allegedly, were caught is that they had a really bad breakup and she hucked some of the things into a river, which were found by the police. This is The Art Thief, a true story of love, crime, and a dangerous obsession. This is the absolutely astounding story of a thief who stole not for money, not for profit, but just because he liked pretty things. And he kept those pretty things in his attic and just admired them. Michael Finkel had done several interviews with Stefan after the fact when he was caught and attempted to do some interviews with his girlfriend, which were not successful, to try and determine how and why. I think the most fascinating part of this book is essentially tells you that getting away with art crime is extremely easy. Like, don't worry about it at all. Super simple. But it is a fascinating look at kind of what compels a person, what drives you to the point of obsession that you're willing to step outside of societal bonds. Stefan and his girlfriend ostensibly never hurt anyone. They never struck a blow. They never threatened anyone. They simply went in and took what they wanted. So is there a victim? Is it even a crime? I mean, in the eyes of the French government, yes, very much it is a crime. But I don't know. I think as you read through the story, there are so many twists and turns and unexpected things that you cannot help be compelled along the narrative. Even if you're not interested in art and or crime, I think it's a really interesting read as they go on this kind of like Bonnie and Clyde crime spree to just really decorate their apartment when they could have gone to IKEA, but that wasn't good enough. So if you're kind of looking for true crime with some like crime question mark, or just looking to kind of understand the psychology of someone who can just walk into a museum and walk out with a Napoleon snuff box, then I really do enjoy this kind of like light romp of a crime story. So yeah, my number one pick, again, not necessarily for the writing or for the story itself, but just for the actual of what happened, is The Art Thief by Michael Finkel.
Genuinely slightly surprised that that was on your number one, but you explained it. I get it, kind of, maybe.
This story brought me so much joy. So much joy. As soon as I kind of read about it in that article, I was the person who was obsessed with it. Because I'm like, what do you mean he stole $1.4 billion of art and never got caught? And it's as simple as just putting it in your pocket and walking outside. He didn't have a single weapon, he brought a Swiss Army knife and that was it. I think that kind of story, and it kind of like is a way of cheating and that I'm able to talk about art and crime, but and the economics of modern art, but without actually talking about any of the books that I read and really enjoyed. So I'm just kind of like sliding that in.
Sure, sure. Anyway, so those are our top five books of 2023. We are so looking forward to more books coming in 2024. And of course, in Corinne's case, catching up on all the 2023 books. So I'm sure we'll hear more of those in the new year. Thank you everyone for joining us. I hope you will also share with us what your favorite books are. Let us know what are your top five picks. And we will share the rest of the staff picks with everybody on our social media. So again, thank you everyone for joining us this year on Keep It Fictional. We will see you. I don't know if this is the last episode of the year. I have no idea. But you know, if it is, we will see you next year. If it is not, we'll see you again sometime this year. All right. Thank you, everybody, and have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you like our show, please tell a fellow book lover about it. You can find a list of all the books we discussed in our show notes. Join us next week for another fun book chat. Until then, keep it fictional.